40 million people in Mexico do not have access to the internet. Our company, Altan Redes, is building a network that will connect them to the world. Chubb wrote insurance policies that gave the Mexican government, our investors, and partners the confidence they needed to make this happen. They also cover our construction risk, damage to the network, and environmental exposure. For a project this complex, Chubb was the one.
Learn more at chubb.com/WSJ.
What's news from the Wall Street Journal? Top stories and timely insights.
I'm J.R. Whalen in New York. How is Wall Street likely to react to President Trump's nominee to be the new head of the Federal Reserve? We'll find out in a moment. But first, these other stories. The on-again, off-again merger talks between T-Mobile and Sprint may be on again. The Wall Street Journal has learned the two companies are working on finding ways to salvage a deal, just days after Sprint chairman Masayoshi Son appeared to call off the talks. The Journal reports that T-Mobile made a revised deal, which Sprint is considering, and the two sides could reach a deal within weeks, but a deal is not imminent. Last month, Sprint called off merger talks after its chairman determined the company is too important of an asset to relinquish control. Unilever is buying the Tazo tea brand from Starbucks for $384 million. As the company looks to pivot from slower-growing black tea toward higher-growth brands, it hopes will help it gain more discerning and more profitable tea drinkers. The deal for Tazo is the latest in a series of small and medium-sized acquisitions by Unilever, which has been working to increase its exposure to higher-growth areas. And the National Football League is pushing back against a provision in the Republican tax bill that would get rid of tax breaks for cities and states that borrow money to fund stadiums for sports teams. An NFL spokesman said the league feels the construction of new stadiums and renovations of stadiums are economic drivers in local communities. And public funding of sports stadiums and a tax exemption on municipal bonds that often underpin such deals has come under fire from members of both parties, including President Trump, in recent years. When we come back, President Trump's nominee to be the next Fed chairman doesn't have a Ph.D. in economics. Does that matter? We'll find out next. This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. Welcome back, everybody. On Thursday, President Trump nominated Federal Reserve Governor Jerome Powell to replace current Fed Chairwoman Janet Yellen when her term expires in February.
Inside the Federal Reserve, we understand that monetary policy decisions matter for American families and communities. I strongly share that sense of mission, and I'm committed to making decisions with objectivity, based on the best available evidence, in the long-standing tradition of monetary policy independence.
That was Powell addressing reporters at the White House after being introduced by Trump. The Wall Street Journal's David Harrison joins us from Washington to discuss the Powell nomination. So, David, Powell's nomination isn't really seen as a surprise. In fact, we shouldn't expect to see much in the way of changes in policy if he's confirmed by the Senate.
Yeah, that's right. Pretty much been a real key ally to Janet Yellen for the past few years. And it seems, based on what we know of his record and from what we know of what we've heard from him in speeches and remarks, that, yeah, he would pretty much keep the Fed on more or less the same course as Janet Yellen, with the small exception of the fact that he may be a little more willing to loosen some of the rules on financial institutions that were put in place after the crisis.
The interesting thing is that he's a Republican and Janet Yellen is a Democrat, yet Powell has not dissented even once on Fed policy decisions in his 5 years on the board.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, the Fed is kind of a weird institution that way. It's they are, you know, the Fed governors are nominated by president, so they are, you know, to some extent, you know, tied to the party that the president that nominates them, but they really don't function that way. It's really not, there really isn't that kind of sort of, you know, D versus R antagonism that you might see elsewhere in Washington. And one thing to note too that's interesting is that Powell's on the board because he was nominated by Barack Obama. He was placed there by a Democratic administration to sort of counterbalance a you know, quote unquote Democratic nominee, Jeremy Stein, that the administration wanted to put on the board. Both were eventually confirmed by the Senate. But once you're on the board, I mean, your party affiliation really isn't quite as significant as sort of where you stand on monetary policy or regulatory policy.
And even though he's a Republican, and that may not be the most significant factor, there are some conservatives who aren't entirely on board with the choice.
Yes, he is. I guess you could call him sort of an old school Republican, like a George H.W. Bush type Republican, sort of a more of a moderate Republican. He did in fact work in the H.W. Bush administration, and yeah, he's been, you know, he's some of the more conservative elements of the party have been a little resistant because he's come around to the idea that, you know, quantitative easing was a good idea and should not be ruled out in the future. You know, this is the Fed program of buying assets as a way to bring down long-term interest rates and boost the economy in a downturn. That was a very controversial program when it was started, and conservatives were really up in arms about it. And he's now, you know, he had a few reservations at first, but he's now sort of come around to the idea that it was a good idea, that it worked. So that's one element, I think, where he causes a little bit of heartburn among the conservatives. And then there's also his stance on financial regulation. He has said he would like to loosen it a little bit, but by and large, he's pretty much signaled that he's on board with the changes that have been made, with the new rules that have been put in place since the crisis. And a number of these conservatives take a much more sort of drastic view of this rulemaking. They really would rather see sort of all these rules sort of swept out. And that's really not Jay Powell's position.
And, you know, it is in large part a lot of the same that we have seen. And I guess that from the Wall Street point of view, Wall Street and the traders do not like surprises. And so I suppose that from their point of view, this might be a good move to nominate Powell.
That's right. Yeah. So there's been a fair amount of speculation that, you know, if Trump had gone for a really for somebody who would promise, say, a significant shift at the Fed, say like a Kevin Warsh, who was sort of, you know, on the short list, or a John Taylor, who was on the short list, there had been some fear that that would cause a little bit of, you know, uncertainty in the markets, and that would cause, you know, maybe some tremors. And that was, you know, something that I'm that reportedly the Trump administration may have wanted to avoid. You know, Donald Trump has said repeatedly that he's pointed to the strong performance of the stock market since he became president as sort of a sign of his good stewardship of the economy. So you would think he would want to avoid anything that would, you know, cause that to wobble a little bit and spark questions about his economic performance. So for that reason, I think it makes sense that he would want to pick somebody who is sort of like Yellen, and who wouldn't cause any kind of concern on Wall Street.
Now, David, if he's confirmed by the Senate, Powell would be the first Fed chairman in 30 years not to have a PhD in economics. Is that seen as being significant?
Well, I mean, it's definitely significant because, you know, this guy he will be essentially America's economist. You know, this is a position where you're in charge about more than almost anybody else of making sure the economy is running smoothly. It may not be as significant as it was in the past, however, because the way the Fed does business has changed incrementally over the years. You know, it used to be, say, under an Alan Greenspan, where Alan Greenspan was thought to be the, you know, the sort of brilliant economist who looked at data and made decisions, and everybody on the board sort of followed along. And that's really not the case anymore. It's much more of a consensus-driven organization. There are an awful lot of staffers who do have PhDs in economics, who do an enormous amount of work, and who produce this research that the top officials sort of, you know, pore over for a long time. So, you know, I've heard from a number of former Fed officials who've said that, you know, and these are people both with and without PhDs, you know, who will say that this is not really as important as perhaps it once was, or, you know, this doesn't necessarily mean that he wouldn't do a good job, just that he would have to rely on the staffers a little bit more than, say, a Janet Yellen, who's herself a brilliant economist. He would have to rely on the staffers to sort of come up to speed a little bit on the economics of his job. But I don't get the sense from anybody that I've talked to that anybody has any concerns that he's wouldn't be at all qualified to take the job.
And Powell, though, has had some strong on-the-job training over the years. You mentioned he was in the George H.W. Bush White House, and he served in the Treasury Department, and he had to deal with a wave of bank failures during that time.
Yeah, that's right. So he does have a lot of experience as a bank regulator, which is a big part of the Fed's mission. He knows that side of the institution very well, and you know, he's a lot of his work on the Fed in the past 5 years has been working on bank rules. So from that standpoint, I think I don't think there's a lot of concern that he's not qualified or experienced enough. It's really more on the monetary side, where you really need or where there's you really need somebody who understands sort of these, you know, macroeconomics and sort of the theories and trends and things that are happening. And that sort of thing is obviously something you would learn with a PhD, but you can also learn that sort of without a PhD. I mean, he has been, let's not forget, a Fed governor for 5 years, and he has been absorbing all the stuff. He's been steeped in the stuff for 5 years. By all accounts, he works very, very hard. He takes home, you know, piles of reports to read. He asks a lot of questions in meetings. So, I mean, I think that's where he would have to basically make his mark. But he has, you know, it's not as though he's coming into this, you know, completely cold. I mean, he has been thinking about these issues for a long time.
Has there been any indication so far that he would run up against any stumbling blocks or roadblocks when it comes to potential confirmation by the Senate?
I think the general thinking right now is that his confirmation is just about assured. I don't think there's any real risk that he won't be confirmed. But there may be a few Republicans who don't vote for him. Some Republicans have raised a few questions about, you know, they may have preferred other finalists, maybe like Kevin Warsh or John Taylor. So he may, you know, they may decide that they want to vote against him, or they may sort of, you know, rally around the nominee of the president of their party and vote in favor of his confirmation. So I don't think there's any real concern about the eventual outcome. What this could mean, though, is we could get some interesting theatrics, so to speak, at his confirmation hearing. He could get, you know, usually if the party of one, you know, the nominee from one party gets peppered with tough questions from senators from the other party, whereas, you know, that nominee's party basically lobs softballs in his direction, Jay Powell may get some tough questions from both sides of the aisle here, which could make things interesting for us.
All right. That's the Wall Street Journal's David Harrison joining us from our Washington bureau. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And finally, President Trump disappeared on Thursday for 11 minutes from Twitter. The social media company said Thursday night it was investigating an outage of the president's Twitter account, and then added later on it was inadvertently deactivated due to human error by a Twitter employee. The account was later restored. And that's What's News. I'm J.R. Whalen reporting from New York for The Wall Street Journal.
Spend time with Alexa, then make What's News part of your flash briefing on the Amazon Echo, The Wall Street Journal. Listen ambitiously.